The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
We have man to start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, listeners, and welcome to the Tuesday Evening Space Show. It's great to be here. Those of you who may be logged on early heard us doing some sound checking for fixing one of our recorders that doesn't seem to want to cooperate tonight. Leave it to computers, probably to Windows updates, but that's not a subject for this show. One note of caution for tonight, the San Francisco Bay Area is being pelted with very heavy winds up to 70 miles an hour and heavy rain. And when we get these rainstorms, I am at risk for losing power, getting water in the telephone line box out on the street and going to all static, and sometimes Comcast high-speed internet, which is not located in my area but down on the peninsula. Those of you that know the Bay Area geography know what I'm talking about. Sometimes they will lose power into their area, and they selectively use generators to keep certain systems up in certain regions. So if we suddenly go dead, it's due to the storm, and there's probably not much I can do about it. If all I'm doing is losing power, I have about 15 minutes to say goodbye to everybody before my battery backups will conk out. If Comcast goes dead, I'll be dead immediately. So we will reschedule the open line show as soon as possible after the storms leave the Bay Area. We're into that season, and it's just something that we have to live with as part of what Mother Nature does to this part of California. Okay, so we are open lines tonight. Remember that you can call in, although right now the toll-free number is not operating on purpose because I have some things to say before I want to take your calls. So if you call and get a business signal, that is by intention. As soon as I get through with my opening statements and my rants of the evening and some of the subjects that I would like to talk about, I'll clear the line, and those of you who want to use toll-free can use it. But do jot down the number. It is 1-866-687-7223. Remember, on open lines, everything goes, no holds bar, any topic you want, except we don't do hardcore politics. Space politics and space policy is okay, but we are a nonprofit, and I try to hold the line on that, so, you know, we're not going to support or bash this or that. And so, you know, don't call in and do that, because I'll cut you off right away. Head you off at the pass, as Matt Dillon would have said a long time ago. Email dmlivings@yahoo.com, drspace@thespaceshow.com, and thespaceshow@gmail.com. Chat is IMICQ and CompuServe. The screen name is the same for all of these services. One word, Space Show Chat. Space Show Chat is up and operating, and it is visible. But if you do not see it and you want to use it, email me, and as I've been saying for weeks, I will reboot Trillian, although it has been much better since Trillian did the updates a couple of weeks ago. Remember that we're trademarked and copyrighted, but you do have permission to download the shows and copy them and distribute them and send them out. But you do not have permission to alter or modify the text of any of the shows, and certainly nothing commercial with the programs, okay? Podcasting comes to us via gigadial.net and Andrew, and we appreciate his service. And the RSS URL to subscribe directly to our podcast is on our website, both of our newsletters. We're iTunes compatible. Search for The Space Show. Search for my name. We're also in Podcast Alley, and as I've been learning, we're in a host of other places that I didn't even know about. So you shouldn't have any trouble getting access to our podcast, but our direct podcasting client is gigadial.net, G-I-G-A-D-I-A-L.net. And we do appreciate Andrew Grummet for his fine service. A couple of announcements. The Lunar Regolith Conference, not conference, challenge at NASA Ames is this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, October 17th and 18th. If you're in the area, go check it out. I'm sure you'll have a lot of fun. I was there last year. I loved it. Last year it was at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo. This year it's in a permanent location at NASA Ames. Unfortunately, I won't be able to come because I'm recovering from a medical procedure, and I'm taking it easy for a couple of weeks in terms of my travel. So do go if you're in the area. That's Mountain View, California. And then next week, October 21st to 22nd, is the International Symposium for Personal and Commercial Spaceflight, and that's Las Cruces, New Mexico. Their website, ISP, as in Peter, CS.com, and you can still probably get in and check it out on their website. If you don't remember that URL, just do Space Grant New Mexico, and you'll see the links for the Personal Spaceflight Symposium. And do go. I was planning on being there. I'm sorry I can't attend that one either due to my taking it easy and not being able to lift things or travel for a couple of weeks. Please remember the Space Show is brought to you in part by the Secure World Foundation, promoting cooperative solutions for space security. For more info, visit their great website. They really do cool work, and I love having them on as part of the show. SecureWorldFoundation.org. Coming up on the One Giant Leap Foundation book site, there are a lot of new books that have been added. If you're going to buy some of the books from our guest, I really urge you to do it through the One Giant Leap Amazon partnership. Amazon does make a donation to the Space Show when you do that. Amazon's a great place to buy books anyway. You don't pay any different pricing. You know, it's all the same. So you just help the Space Show when you buy a book. So go check it out. We've added a lot of new books. A lot of guests that have written books have come on the show, and a lot of others are about to come on. I have some other books that we'll be talking about later on. Also, within the next day or so, there will be a new page added to the One Giant Leap website, and it's going to be funding projects for 2010. These are some of the projects that need to be funded by gifts, grants, however it's done. It includes our satellite upload. It includes the Monday KKNW Seattle station broadcast. We have a YouTube program that we're wanting to produce. We have a National Science Foundation, the Space Show Classroom program. I've talked about this before, but you will see six or seven projects and sponsorship opportunities on that page with estimated budgets for what it costs to fund those programs for 1 year. If you're interested, certainly contact me and let me know. You know, we decided to break our projects down into small segments. They're huge for us. They would be small for most people, you know, in companies looking for a grant or going before, you know, a funding source. I mean, most people don't do it for $10,000 or $20,000. So check it out, and if any of them interest you, or you know private foundations or people that are interested, let me know, because these projects need to be funded to go ahead in 2010. Okay, a couple of things that I would like to talk about tonight, and hopefully you will, you know, sort of go along with me and talk about them too. One is that all of you have heard me do rants from time to time about what's the magic silver bullet? What's the compelling reason for human spaceflight? And space advocates, space enthusiasts, the space community likes to tout compelling reasons to each other, but clearly we don't make this connection with the general public very well. So when I did the AIAA panel on the Augustine Commission a week ago, and that was my opening question to the panel, I really wasn't that satisfied with the answers that came in from the panel, but I moved us on as moderator because we had so many questions coming in. And for those of you who sent in a question, I do apologize. We could not get to all of your questions, and we were absolutely up against the clock at a max of 2 hours. So there wasn't anything I could do. I moved us on, but I wasn't satisfied with how that went. Well, lo and behold, somebody called to my attention that my friend Ken Murphy, who does the really cool blog called outofthecradle.net. So if you want to check that blog out, and I do recommend you do, it is www.outofthecradle.net. He did a blog article about a week or 10 days ago on my rants and on compelling reasons for human spaceflight. And he said there is a compelling reason, and he goes and gives his answer. Well, I responded back, and a couple of other people responded. And if you go and you want to check out that short discussion and read what Ken had to say and become familiar with this fine blog, go do so. I think there are 6 comments, and 2 or 3 of them are from me. But lo and behold, I hold my guns. I still say the same thing, and we can talk about this tonight. There ain't no compelling reason for human spaceflight that resonates with the general public. So lo and behold, here's what happens. The day that L-Cross is supposed to whack the moon, okay? I'm using the word whack because I'm sick and tired of hearing the media say we're going to bomb the moon. I'd rather say whack it. Neither are particularly accurate. But anyway, I happened to have a news program on, which was on Fox News on cable TV, and Shepard Smith was doing the news. And he had a piece on L-Cross with space show guest, former astronaut, legitimate planetary scientist, real scientist, great friend, Dr. Tom Jones. And it's a great interview. And Tom is talking about the importance of L-Cross and stuff. And then Tom signs off, and Shep mutters along and says, you know, with 2 wars going on and the economy in shambles and unemployment the way it is, what the world are we doing going to the moon? Why do we even have this space program? And, man, he just trashed it. There was no reason for him to think that we needed a human spaceflight program, probably any spaceflight program. And he said, you know, I love this stuff like everybody else. And, you know, Tom Jones is one of my favorite people to interview. And, boy, he's one of my favorite, too. And there he said it, right there. But, you know, in light of 2 wars, in light of an economic horrible meltdown, unemployment, you know, at record numbers, you know, you've all heard the laundry list. Doesn't matter what country you live in. It's pretty much the same a lot of places. No compelling reason to justify spending this money at this time on these kinds of projects. I actually have the recording of that. The problem is Fox News is copyrighted, and when you stream on the internet, playing copyrighted material gets you in a lot of trouble, and the programs and the services I use are monitored for that stuff. So I'm not going to play it for you. I don't have permission from Shep or from Fox News to play it. Okay, later in the day, I receive a call from the producer of Neil Cavuto's show, and they wanted me to hightail it into Fox's station in San Francisco to do a segment on L-Cross. Well, it was 2 days after my operation. I could not do it, and it was Friday, and so I had to turn down the opportunity of a lifetime to be on national cable TV with millions of viewers. Anyway, you know, timing is everything, as they say, right? So Neil opens up his segment, and this was on the website. You can still hear part of it. And he says a couple of, why are we doing this? This is crazy. Why are we spending this kind of money? We have no business doing this. And then he interviews Buzz Aldrin on L-Cross. Okay, so the Buzz interview is totally separate from the issues that I'm talking about. And Buzz gets off, and this part was not on the website, but I have it recorded. But again, I can't use it for reasons I've already said. And he brings on some financial analyst whose name escapes me. And for 5 or 6 minutes, they talk about how we can't afford the space program, and there's no compelling reason to do it. And we got 2 wars going on, and got an economic meltdown, got unemployment, and got this, this, and this. People can't pay their bills, and you know, got homes being foreclosed. And what the hell are we doing trying to go to the moon and do all this stuff in space? Okay, so they reach millions of people between their live broadcast, their replay, and their website. So that's something we can talk about. For those of you who don't think that it matters, like Ken at outofthecradle.net, who say it doesn't matter about reaching the general public because we're talking among ourselves and we know why it is important to have human spaceflight, guess again. It matters. Now, I do know that Keith Cowling of NASA Watch was on PBS News, on the News Hour on National Public TV. Keith is great. He's a space cadet like the rest of us, very knowledgeable, very well-informed, very professional. He wasn't the general public, but at least the News Hour brought on somebody who could articulate and make the case for all of this. But Neil Cavuto has a great show, and he is a bright guy. And he also has his own hour on Fox Business News. So there you have it. We can talk about that. Okay, a friend of the space show, Kelly, sent me an email yesterday, and I thought these might be good topics for anyone who wants to try to hash them around. Or if you know someone to recommend as a guest that could really talk about this stuff, hey, I'm open. I would do a show on this stuff. So question number one that Kelly asked, why does it cost NASA twice as much now to return the moon than it did the first time around? Well, I have a feeling why, but y'all may want to talk about that. Why does it cost NASA more now to make Ares 1 with shuttle-derived SRBs than it cost them to develop the shuttles in the first place? Number three, why does it cost NASA more now to make the Orion capsule and service module than it cost to make the orbiters? So anyone who might want to pontificate on inflation, cost of labor, benefits, risk analysis, products, materials, manufacturing, transportation, energy. Look at what it cost energy today used in manufacturing versus what it cost during the 60s. To manufacture, transportation, everything. Join in the discussion on that. And I guess anything and everything else is fair game on open lines. Now, remember also, for people who want to be on the space show and think you have something important to say, this is your audition platform, people. And so you can call up and you can, hold the telephone line for some minutes. And tell us what's going on with you and why you think you have a lot to say and what you want to say. And let's see if we get a discussion going after you leave the phone. Unfortunately, I have only one phone line, so I can't plug other callers in with you when you call in on the toll-free line. So that's also available, and hopefully some of you who do voice an opinion that you would like to be on the space show will, in fact, call in this time and do it. Other than that, everything is fair game. I'm opening the toll-free line. It is open. That number, again, is 1-866-687-7223. Again, everything is welcome. All topics are a go except hardcore partisan politics. We're not doing that. And that's it. So email again, dmlivings@yahoo.com, drspace@thespaceshow.com, and thespaceshow@gmail.com, and chat on AOL, which is IMICQ and CompuServe, one screen name, space, show, chat. And someone is calling on the toll-free line. Let's see who it is. Hi there. You're on the space show. Who are you?
Hello, sir. This is Douglas Millett.
Hi, Doug. Sorry you can't use Skype.
Oh, that's okay. It's no big deal. Just an alternative platform. If it works, great. If not, I can call.
What's on your mind?
Well, I wrote a book myself not too long ago called Turning Point, How Space Exploration and Development Will Determine the Rise or Fall of Humanity. And what it is, it's a non-technical book to reach out to the non-space person and explain to them why it's important. And in fact, one of the things you touched on in your opening monologue is perfect. Because, and especially that it was on Fox, because I myself am going to New York November 5th and 6th to be on Fox, the Strategy Room. That's their new media online component called the Strategy Room.
Who hosts?
To explain exactly why space is important. And while I'm there, I'm going to try and pull some strings and see if I can get on Mother Fox, the TV network, and basically do the same thing and explain to the world why space is so important.
Who hosts this Fox Online program that you're talking about?
It's an eight-hour-a-day show of one-hour segments. In the morning, you've got Harris Faulkner. You've got Eric Bowling from the Fox Business Network runs an afternoon show. You've got Uma Pemaraju. You've got Steve Doocy runs a show every now and then. They basically juggle around most of the major anchors that are on Fox during the day, and they all do one-hour segments. Some people are regular all the time. Like Harris Faulkner, every morning at 9 Eastern, starts off the whole day with her one-hour show called The Morning Click.
And this is Internet only?
Yes, it's Internet only. It's 8 hours nonstop streaming. You even see all the behind-the-scenes stuff. And it's basically a roundtable discussion. It's been on for a year. They had the one-year anniversary not too long ago.
What's it called again?
It's called The Strategy Room.
Huh. I don't usually watch other stuff on the Internet, but I'm going to check that out. You've got to tell us when you're going to do that. When are you going to be on?
I'm going to be on November 5th and 6th. The one thing that's pretty much locked down right now is the 6th, which is a Friday. I'll be sitting down with Uma Pemaraju talking about the book and everything at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, East Coast. So you can do that.
So that's 9 o'clock in the morning, California.
Right, right. It's either 12 or 1. They sometimes shift her around, so that's plus or minus 1. I'll have greater detail. We're still 3 weeks out.
Well, if you email me the details, I'll start announcing it and hold the dates.
Absolutely. I'll do that for you. And I'm still trying to get the 5th locked down to find out. I'm trying to get on Eric Bowling's show in the afternoon because that's a pretty popular show. And I contact the Strategy Room frequently, so they know me. This is why they've allowed me to come on board. I'm one of the diehard viewers that's been there for a while. And now that I've got the book and I always bring space into the equation, especially with like employment and the economic issues, anybody who says, what can space do right now? We're fighting wars, blah, blah, blah. I have one small scenario that can easily quiet them up in a heartbeat.
Well, hold on. Before you do that, are you going to get a chance when you're there to hand your book to Neil Cavuto and Shepard Smith?
I don't know. I hope I can. I'm going to try to bring extra copies to do that. Whether or not I run into them in the building or not, I don't know. It's on two separate floors. Fox building's kind of big. So if I can, I will. If I can't, I'll at least get them a PDF version or something. I'll find a way to get the information to the big dogs.
Put it in their mailbox or give it to the receptionist with their name on it or something. The second question is, are any of the Fox blonde babes on this show that you're going to get to work with?
Oh, yes. Let's see. Courtney Steele is on there, and also, Jiminy Christmas. I'm trying to remember all the names now. They randomize all the time. Oh, sheesh.
Megan is out for maternity leave, so you're not going to get a chance to work with her. But
right. Heather Nauert is also out on maternity leave. She's also one of the ones that hosts usually at 10 o'clock right after Harris.
Well, I'll have to check it out. Okay, so what's the compelling reason? You got the answer. We want to hear the compelling reason.
I have a scenario, and it basically boils down to this. The Apollo program over the course of 13 years cost about $150 billion in 2008 money. So if you were to take the cost and ramp it up with inflation and yada, yada, it's about $150 billion total for Apollo. Apollo employed over 400,000 people for that one program. So now let's look at the economic, quote-unquote, stimulus package, which hasn't exactly done a whole lot from what we know, but let's just say the $700 billion. $700 billion, if you were to put it into a gigantic, robust, we're going to build a base on the moon program, something major, you could fund four full-scale Apollo programs and directly employ 1.6 million people. So since January of this, at the start of this year, we've lost 3.5 million jobs. In one fell swoop, you would employ half that on a major space program. And these aren't people making $12 an hour. This is serious income, averaging about $80,000 a year. These are people who have disposable income. So you're going to start seeing the trickle-down effect into, I'm going to buy a house now. I can buy a car. I need more clothes. I have disposable income. I can go to the movies. All the people working, all the 1.6 million people making this cash, will be able to spend this cash. And so not only do we have a direction that says we're going to do something major on the moon and spend $700 billion doing it, you're going to employ a lot of high-end, high-quality people. The ancillary jobs that are going to be created are going to probably double that amount, if not more so. The trickle-down is going to be tremendous. You get the private industry involved to where it's less government-run and more private. I'm a big new space guy. I'm tired of Uncle Sam dictating who goes to space. I want all of us to go to space and have the opportunity to do so. So we start bringing in more players in the game on a project of that magnitude, all the costs start to come down because the private companies are going to start competing against each other to do it cheaper, better, faster. And also safe, or maintain the proper safety, of course, but you're going to get better results. And so when you factor all that in, plus kids growing up are going to see this huge project, and they're going to know, not maybe I can go to space, but I can without a doubt go to space if I get a math, science, engineering degree. You're going to see our education system go through the roof of kids saying, I'm doing that. I'm going to go beyond the moon because, look, they're building something. It's going to happen. So when you start adding all that together, it affects the economy, it affects education. You start getting global partners involved, and it involves international relations. There's nothing that can't be done under a system of that magnitude. So if you're going to dump $700 billion on something, why not do it with that?
Okay, so you lost 99% of the general public audience. Your arguments have been made many, many times before, and they don't work, even though you're saying them slightly differently. And, you know, you got to do an elevator pitch. You got maybe 3 minutes of attention with somebody to get them interested in more. It's like an executive summary of a business plan. But the problem with your argument is it doesn't resonate with the people because it doesn't connect them to what is going on with space. Jeff Faust of the Space Review wrote a terrific article about this about 10 days ago. And he talked about the Augustine panel saying the reason we're going is we need to explore. You know, that's a common one we have. And he said, fine reason, nothing wrong with it, but it doesn't have anything in it for the average person on the street. And when President Kennedy could get away with saying, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, in today's world, especially with stimulus packages and all this other stuff going on, it's ask what you can get from your government. Ask how your government can take care of you from cradle to grave. It's gimme, gimme, gimme. It's what I want. And so if you're going to make a compelling reason to put people into space and spend billions of dollars when people can't pay their mortgages, can't pay their prescription drugs, have all of these other problems, are losing jobs where, you know, true unemployment is probably around 18% because the 10% figure doesn't reflect people that have quit trying.
Right.
Then you've got to say, this is what's in it for you and your kids if you're going to allow us to spend your money to go to the moon or to build a rocket or, you know, whatever, you know, it might be. So if I were doing ding, 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 I'd ding you. You know, if this was a gong show, you'd get gonged. You got to boil that down to 2 or 3 minutes. You got to give the people something rather than talk about this theoretical, esoteric, we're going to create jobs, we're going to do this. You know how many times they've heard the stimulus package say they're going to create jobs? I mean, what BS is that?
But
come
what
on.
Kind of jobs? That's the problem.
Well,
that's creating quote-unquote shovel-ready one-year jobs. I'm talking about a 15- to 20-year program.
Yeah, but you
most
can't.
Most people retire at 20 years.
You've got 3 minutes to do that. And,
I don't want 3 minutes. I want 10 to 15 to really educate these people.
Well,
this is not enough.
You know what?
Too big.
Well, here's your problem. I'm the general public. I'm not going to give you 15 minutes of my time because you lost me in the first 2 minutes of your statement. Because there's nothing in what you're saying that, you know, and I wish some other people would chime in on this. I wish I had more than one phone line. There's nothing in it that's going to resonate with me. And there's nothing in it that's going to make me sit down and send an email or write a letter to any of those bozos in Washington, D.C. posing to be our elected representatives and say, spend my money on space.
So 1.5 million high-end jobs is not enough of a pull.
No, because these people don't resonate with that. They're not going to get the high-end jobs. They're not.
Yes, they can.
You're so theoretically out there. All I'm telling you to do is find a way to connect it to people.
That's easy. I could talk about the spinoff.
Spinoffs don't work. Spinoffs don't work. NASA has spent millions talking about spinoffs. They have fabulous spinoff virtual reality and interactive websites. They publish a free book that you can get every year on spinoffs. They don't sell the space program.
They don't promote it well enough. NASA is terrible at their own public relations.
But people like Neil Cavuto and Shepard Smith know about it. You know, and it's not even resonating with intelligent people that have a microphone that can influence. And I'll bet you if you met Neil when you go up there on November 5th and 6th, or you were able to meet Shepard Smith in the elevator, and you said, I heard your cut and your rant about why space is not, and let me tell you why it's important, the next stop they'd be off the elevator. You really have to know how to make an elevator presentation. And that's what you got to do. And the elevator presentation is designed to get you in front of someone for a more detailed presentation. But if you can't whet their appetite off the bat, even Joe and Mary Sixpack standing at the bus stop, they're not going to give you 15 or 20 minutes. And I mean, they may do it and be polite because they don't want to, you know, just diss you off and say, you know, get out of here, I'm not interested. So, you know, it goes in one ear and out the other ear. I mean, we all do that. I'm not disagreeing with your causes. I don't think they're the compelling reason, and I don't think you make the case. And I think educating the general public is a really uphill, very, very costly endeavor that is very challenging to do because it's hard to know what's going to click with the particular target audience of the general public that you're with. If you're in Safeway, which is a, you know, our grocery store chain out here in California, that's going to be different than you're at a college lecture on healthcare and you're all standing around during the break getting donuts and coffee and cookies and you strike up a conversation with people who are clearly pretty educated and pretty savvy politically and you want to lay out the groundwork for space. You know, that's a totally different venue and you got to have your elevator pitch that says essentially the same thing for both people. I mean, that's how I see it. I mean, again, I wish I could bring in other people on the phone.
Well, I say Rome wasn't built in a day, and we've done a terrible job of showing John Q. public how important space really is to their everyday life. And so am I going to get everybody right away with a three-minute pitch? No. But if I hit them again and again and again and go around and do speeches and presentations and hit the kids, hit the young generation, that will make a difference. I don't think you can do it with a three-minute pitch. Space is too big. It can't happen that way.
Well, here's the deal. You've got a lot of people that are really bright and capable that have gone before you, and look at where we are today. So you're not the only one. Not everybody has dropped the ball. Come on, you can't say that. There have been really bright, capable, competent people out there pitching this for years and years and years. Look at people with the Space Frontier Foundation. Jim Muncy, Rick Tumlinson, Bob Werb, the founders. Look at people at NSF, the Planetary. I mean, these are really bright, you know, well-versed people, the people who run the chapters of these organizations, and people at Boeing who go to AIAA conferences and other people. And you can't say that they've dropped the ball.
I think in some cases, though, they preach to the choir.
Well, that's what our whole industry does. And that's what we're doing on this show. I can't break this show out into a Fox News audience. I'd love to be able to do that. But, you know, space is not on everybody's, you know, tip of the tongue. God almighty, I wish it were. You know, I wish I had, you know, a third of the audience of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell and George Norrie. You know, but they do 3 million people a week. I'm lucky if you know, a good show gets 20,000 downloads in 2 weeks. And it's mostly among space aficionados around the world who are downloading these shows.
Right, which is why my crux of my point and the reason why I wrote the book is to get to whet their appetite and have them read the book and get the greater detail.
Okay, so how do they get your book?
It's on lulu.com. It's on www.lulu.com. It's called Turning Point. You can search it up that way. It will be on Amazon.com in about 3 more weeks. It takes a few weeks for Lulu to rotate up through Amazon.
How much is the book?
It's under 20, 1940 something.
1940. Now, what is your background? Tell us who you are.
I'm a systems engineer for the space shuttle program here in Houston.
Ah, so you're tainted. You work for the dark side of the moon, right?
Well, you know, go with it. Go where I can pay the bills and support the family until I can do what I really want to do, which is travel around, do guest speaking presentations, and talk up space.
What do you hear? Do you hear that you guys are going to get extended for a couple of flights, or what's the rumor mill like from where your vantage point is?
No, we're toast.
So you don't think you're going to get extended for a couple of flights?
No, not really. Not the way some of the more experienced people are jumping ship right now. There's a lot of upper-level management that are bailing out left and right over the past 2 months. So that's kind of writing on the wall when you start seeing people with 20 and 30 years experience, you know, ejecting, like myself, the burning ship. So it's not looking too great that Shuttle's going to do anything more. In fact, I read today that Bolden has, in as much so, said that you know, they're going to ramp down Shuttle still for 2011. I'm trying to remember where I read that, but I don't remember if it was.
Well, I got a news clip the other day that ATK, which is actually a company, I know people will hate me for this, but I really, really like the people at ATK, and I've been out there 3 or 4 times, and I'm very impressed with what they do. And I know all of you are going to say I've gone to the dark side, and trust me, I have gone to the dark side, no doubt about it. But they're laying off 450 people in Promontory, Utah, and around the area. So 150 of them work on the Minuteman II motor, and the rest of them are out of Promontory that do stuff related to Ares One and the other SRB stuff. They wouldn't be laying people off if they didn't think this stuff was going down the tubes quickly, which is sort of what you're hearing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's what I surmise. I haven't talked to anybody at ATK and said, why are you laying 450 people off? I think it's a disaster. You know, if we kill our qualified space engineers and our people, and they all go out and get other jobs and everything else, and we decide someday to ramp up and have a real space program, we're not going to have a talented, skilled, educated set of employees.
Right, which is exactly why something like spending the money on creating a major project, a major program, that with international effort, not something that we foot the majority of the bill on like the ISS, that's ridiculous, but something that's a little more financially equal on all fronts would really ramp up that education base if
okay.
We really picked a strong target.
Doug, you got a question from a listener by email. Okay.
Okay.
This is from Kelly. And Kelly's the guy who sent in those questions that I read during the earlier part of the show. Why should the public give space advocates such as yourself 15 minutes when they've got most of 50 years of NASA and advocates' advocacy and evidence showing them that space is impossible and useless? Pushing it as a pork and jobs program just cuts your own argument out of the picture.
I completely agree, which is why I don't advocate the government taking charge. I advocate private space industry doing what private industry does, innovate, develop, and profitize off of it. The reason to go to space is not for science and for research. That's a nice ancillary thing. The reason to go to space is to make money on it, and there are ways to make money on it. There's ways to expand and grow through space. It's not the government. I think the government has done a horrible job of managing the space program over the past 30 years. We all know we've been stuck in LEO with delays and nonsense forever. So, no, it's not the government. Government is limited. This is my viewpoint. Government's job is to be Lewis and Clark. It's to do some of the more expensive stuff that's not going to generate a profit return, but that does develop innovative technologies that private industry probably could not otherwise afford to do. But the private industry comes behind Lewis and Clark, paves the road, sets up the infrastructure, builds the fort on the other side, the other destination, and develops a transportation system to and from for whatever the profit reason is, whether it's a space hotel on the moon so you can do a honeymoon on the moon watching the Earth rise, and you get enough shuttle flights and infrastructure going back and forth with orbiting fuel depots and whatnot to make it, to drop the cost down, then more people can realistically afford that, and it becomes a viable industry, not the government, private industry.
Okay, one more thing, and then I want to clear the line.
Sure.
NASA Administrator Bolden made a comment the other day. Now, everybody recall that the Augustine Commission, one of their recommended options, I mean, they're not recommended, they're, one of their options was the commercial option. And they didn't spell out what the commercial companies are, but clearly they're EELD, SpaceX with Falcon 9, you know, assuming that it works and becomes productive. And they, you know, there's an orbital vehicle that's talking about being made in partnership with Boeing. And of course there are foreign vehicles. That would be a big step, but there are commercial foreign vehicles such as Ariane. So Bolden came out the other day and he said, there's not going to be any EELV or anything else that we're going to use for anything.
Right.
And you probably saw that article. Bob Bigelow of Bigelow Aerospace, who has two for two up there, you know, with his inflatables, he wrote an open letter to Bolden about this stuff. So, and I'm trying to get Bob back on the show. I don't know if that will work or not, but, you know, I would like to have him talk about that open letter on the space show. Anyway, the commercial option, it doesn't sound like the status quo has any desire for it. I have no idea what Obama and his science team will do when they're evaluating space policy. Boy,
I won't go political on you.
I think you know, human spaceflight, you know, may be at risk here. I just don't know. And I hope I'm wrong.
I agree, but I think we're to a point now to where enough people with money, like Branson, for example, do see a potential. They see a viable potential, and they see that we're in a situation right now, a turning point in our existence, I guess you could say. That's why I named my book as such, that we're at a point now with the economy being crazy, fuzzy money and bad banking being the crux of our economy is a bad idea, that we need to start getting into the production and manufacturing and expansion of the species, and we're running out of room on this planet. You can go through the energy reasons, the land resource reasons, there's a host of reasons why we need to go up.
Yeah, but you're talking suborbital guys like Branson. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, orbital and really doing things in space.
Yeah, but Branson just recently announced that they're going to start doing satellite launches off of White Knight 2. So
yeah,
that's
but that's
a step in the right direction.
Well, because White Knight 2 has that capability of doing that. I've done shows on that subject before with some of the people who are responsible for creating that option and doing that. X-Core has a similar kind of, but different, size parameter kind of option if they get their Lynx vehicle going. But it, listen, for human spaceflight, you can't, you know, talking about suborbital up and down is we're magnitudes away from taking humans into space and having a human flight program. But listen, I want to stay in touch with me by email. I definitely want your information about being on Fox, and I'll promote it when I do hold the dates and see if we can get some more people interested in watching the program. And make your points succinctly. That would be my advice. But you're online, so they won't be able to shut you up on Fox.
Right. Well, I mean, they don't shut. The cool thing about Strategy Room is it's an open forum conversation. I'm going to be there for an hour.
Oh, so it's like a chat room, so you can
it's a roundtable discussion. It's the host with like four or five expert guest people from various disciplines. The viewers can email in, and they read the emails religiously. They're always interacting with the audience. It's like you're there having a conversation with the pundits and the experts and the host, and that's what made it take off. It's such an awesome program. You interact directly with the conversation. You're there.
Well, I will definitely check it out based on your recommendation. Stay in touch with me. Send me that information, and we'll talk again. I want to give the line available to if somebody else, if they want to call in.
Absolutely. Can
okay.
do, David. I appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Okay, listeners, the toll-free line is now opened again, 866-687-7223. We're a little bit behind the eight ball. I'm going to take a two-minute break, and we'll be right back.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with The Space Show. Your support of The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support The Space Show button. Your contribution will help The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to The Space Show is tax deductible.
The mission of The Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
And welcome back, everybody. I'm laughing because this Live 365 streaming computer, Live 365 is now giving me messages. So one just flashed up that says your stream quality is good. Makes me think of something else, but...
Very good. I got that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there'll be a lot of other guys out there that get that as well. Charles Pooley is with us from Mojave. Welcome. How you doing, Charles?
Okay. And I would suggest that Doug and maybe Kelly too Google the word micro launchers for the answer to what they've been talking about, because basically I think we are caught up in a kind of a malaise that followed the Apollo program. There was a rush to beat the Russians to the moon, a sense of mission, and all that kind of stuff. Now that that's over, there's nothing to sustain these multiple grand-scale, collectivist, government-paid programs, which only compete with one another in a giant zero-sum game. I think the horse is dead. We should quit flogging it and invent a new pathway to space, and that does not mean starting with something big scale like manned spaceflight. Work your way up to it. Start with micro launchers.
Well, Augustine has this report out, which you've probably read.
I've looked at it, and I will study it some more, but at first blush, it looks to me like more of the same, more grand-scale collectivist solutions.
Well, they're going to make a policy that does something that Augustine, is talking about, you know, in terms of human, big-time human spaceflight. So, there's going to be billions of dollars spent not on your micro-launchers approach, but on big systems that the government may do, or maybe the big private companies will do. I don't think the Mojave crowd is going to get involved in it for a long time to come, but I may be wrong on that. But certainly SpaceX is going to be in there, and Orbital, and Boeing, and Lockheed,
SpaceX
and others.
SpaceX is in the process of becoming another Orbital Sciences.
Well, everyone says that.
Another member of the circle of companies surrounding NASA. And, in other words, a civilian version of what Eisenhower warned us about, you know, the military-industrial complex.
Well, a lot of people say that.
Okay. And there's no sense of participation, no opportunity to get in on it directly. And that, my pitch, like it was with computers in the mainframe days. And then along came the microcomputer, and then that grew.
Well,
a seed of involvement and participation into big business.
Well, the barriers to entry for commercial space are far more significant than they were for the computer
but
industry.
But if you start with a microcomputer equivalent, the barrier is much lower.
Well, what's your market? Where are you going to make money?
The very first microcomputers being built didn't really have a market, except to attract interested people to get involved, get their hands on, and participate. It started with a very small number of people that then grew in number, and then the hardware evolved.
Well, but, I mean, you want to attract people to micro-launchers or something similar.
People, yes.
Why would I be attracted to it if I'm not going to make money?
If you are not attracted, then, okay, maybe someone else will.
But
maybe
why
one person in 10,000 who hears about it will like the idea.
But why? Out of altruism? I mean...
No, out of just fascination with the idea of seeing the analog of the microcomputer and micro-launchers analogy and getting in on it. The big collectivist thing does not afford an opportunity for involvement. Only a job in a large company doing some microscopic, minuscule part of something or pushing paper or whatever. It's boring.
Are you there?
Yeah.
I thought I lost you.
No.
But, you know, people could get involved in microcomputers. You know, they saw a downstream market. They saw a huge market. I remember being told you'd go to special shows, you know, home shows and things like that, and they'd have dummy cardboard, you know, samples of what a computer was to look like back then. And they said, every home will have a computer, and a computer will be controlling your home.
Well,
you know,
it was true. It came true, didn't it?
Yeah, but there was a huge... You know, at that time, probably 170 million person market in the United States alone. Now
yeah.
There's a 300 million person market, but not for space.
No, it will be, in terms of numbers of people, smaller but larger than now. What I'm talking about is trying to create a way for people to, those who are interested and motivated, to become directly involved, which is presently impossible. You can get a job with SpaceX, yes. They are now up to about 800 people, I believe. But you will have a job and a paycheck, but that's about it.
Well, so what do you say to people? I mean, I'm trying to think of how you make the... I mean, it's the same thing Doug was doing. I'm saying, you're not going to resonate and connect with the people.
No.
So let's...
I'm not trying.
Well, but who do you want to hear you?
Who is your one in 10,000 people might like the idea.
So, and what is your call to action?
As soon as I can round up a few mass of people, I'm going to move to probably Las Vegas and get started.
No, that isn't what I meant, not your personal call to action. But, I mean, what is the call to action for the people? Excite them. What is your lure, your hook? I mean, why are they the one in 10 million or whatever it's going to be? How are you going to grab them?
Well, they will just have to look at the website and think. Some will see something in the idea. Most will not. But I tell you what's not working, and that's what has been going on and what is going on now.
Well, you can get second and third and fourth votes and support on that part of what you're saying for
yeah.
sure.
Well, what I was trying to do was to invent a new paradigm, something worth trying. And I think this could be like the Altair in 74 or 75, whenever the hell it appeared.
Do you talk this up among your peers in
yes.
Mojave?
First of all, there's almost nobody here, and the few that are here are got their heads deeply buried into the particular things they're working on. There's no real sense of community here at the airport.
Everybody's
here for 5 years.
Yeah, everybody's involved in their own
correct.
Business venture.
Yeah. Their own pathway, their own, well, religion. You've heard me say that one before.
Well, yeah, in a way that's understandable.
Yeah.
You know,
a commitment to an idea, and I'm guilty of that, a commitment to an idea and, you know, a focusing. So everybody here is going their own different way, and they don't talk to each other very much, except, you know, polite, superficial, and so on. When Masson did his apparently successful 90-second hover LLC flight,
quite a few people watched it, and I mean, there was a sense of camaraderie while that went on, but now we're back in our own cubbyholes.
What do you want listeners to take away from your call today?
Think about, is some totally heretical approach worth thinking about, and take a look at micro launchers, either Google the word or my name or the website, which is that word, and think. And, you know, a few might go for this. The deal is I see the present situation as being deadlocked. It's over. And nothing will change unless some totally divergent thing is tried. And I think it means temporarily setting aside manned space flight until tiny spacecraft can become small spacecraft or launchers, then can become medium-sized launchers, growing to almost the size of a Falcon 1, and then single-seat or at most two-seater manned vehicles that weigh maybe 1 ton on orbit. There was something called a ULO concept that was to be part of a screenplay, but unfortunately the screenplay didn't sell.
So you wouldn't favor going to Mars anytime soon?
Build a pathway there, a multiple-step technological pathway, and it would take decades. But it would be an incremental growth like the microcomputers did. That's the best analogy I can think of. And it has to be multiple steps. The journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step, not the 100,000th. And I hear people proposing the 100,000th step as a starting point, and it doesn't work. The horse is dead. We should quit flogging it.
And what would you do with NASA?
Best thing would be to reconfigure it into a number of agencies like NSA, which support research. Like NACA used to be before It was devoured by the Borg. you get it?
Yeah, of course, everybody else gets it too.
Yes. That is the best thing that could happen. I don't know if that's politically possible or not. So what might make sense is to simply ignore it, just consider it as a small financial leakage in the budget, and proceed as if it doesn't exist.
Well, of course, unless the government can, stop the private space movement, the private space movement is pursuing its
goals. Then Khrushchev would have been right.
Well, is pursuing its goals regardless of what NASA does.
I mean, forcing collectivism is what Khrushchev was forecasting in a famous shoe exercise.
Before you leave, give us an update on what's happening with Lunar Lander down there.
Yes, okay. There are three here at the airport, no less than three different outfits trying the Lunar Lander thing. Masten is going to, I think on the 26th and 7th or 7 and 8, try for their level 2. There's one called Bonova. They're going to try a few days earlier than that. And then Paul Breed, whom I know the best of the bunch. I go watch a lot of his tests and help out a little bit with just manual labor and stuff. And he's going to, on the 30th and 31st, try for both levels. He has his, what he calls the blue ball, the peroxide monopropellant vehicle, in pretty good shape. It has flown, over 90 seconds a couple times, but yeah, I think he's ready to make a go on that. He's right now struggling to get his bipropellant version of the blue ball, the 3-minute.
And it'll all be over by the end of the month, right?
Yeah, it ends, 31st is the end, and he, for some reason, chose the last two possible days, maybe just to give him the most time, I don't know.
You're not on his team this year?
No, I was to accompany him, when was it? The last year it was done in, last year was done at, the year before that, 07. But he had to back out of it. And I'm just sort of very peripherally just helping him out with a little bit of manual work or something.
Okay. What else is going down on? Is there anything, any other news or anything?
Well, it's pretty quiet here. The Scaled is still testing their White Knight 2, and I haven't yet been able to catch any of the tests. I don't get invited or anything, so they just go on. I think we've made about 20 flights by now.
You're a heretic. What can we say?
That's it. That is partly it. But partly my work here is pretty solitary in my little offices here. And that's another reason of getting out of Mojave. It's too small, too remote, too cut off.
Well,
it's in California.
But it does have the spaceport, so.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean anything. For one thing, the spaceport would not allow vertical takeoff on there.
No, it's horizontal only.
Manned horizontal only.
Manned horizontal only, yeah.
Manned horizontal only. It's explicitly restricted itself to that. And and there's a bunch of reasons why, and then California is a sinking ship.
Yeah, but it may turn around. I mean,
after it hits the bottom.
we're not even going to go down that road. But the head of eBay, Meg Whitman, may end up trying to run California like a business. So
okay, we shall see.
We shall see.
Anything is worth trying, and somebody who knows something about business. Well, first of all, we'll probably throw off this to Sacramento.
Well, they'll probably be terminated instantly.
Well, just be totally appalled by what they see. Anyhow, that's my pitch. Of course, you know it. I've been on your show twice. Thank you. And what can I say except I think something has to be tried, and everybody beating the bushes or flogging this dead horse, it's not going to change. It's not going to do anything. The space station will whirl around until it deorbits. That's it.
Charles, stay in tune and stay in touch, and we'll talk to you later.
Sure enough. Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. Listeners, that's it for Charles's call. The toll-free line is available, 1-866-687-7223. And we're going to take our next break. We're trying to get back on schedule here. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. So we'll take more of your calls and your email questions and chat questions.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with The Space Show. Your support of The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support The Space Show button. Your contribution will help The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to The Space Show is tax deductible.
I'm Dr. David Livingston, creator and host of The Space Show, and I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. Our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And The Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Open Lines on The Space Show. I'm your host, David Livingston, and we have another caller with us, and this is Kelly Pelosi, who you've been hearing about by email. You like that, right, Kelly?
You'll die slowly.
Mr. Pelosi, what do you have to tell us?
Dark, you evil one. Well, one, it's a little depressing when your first caller was calling in and says, yes, tell NASA is a way to have job programs in districts. I think the big problem is right now
you're not going to get NASA selling the program to do something valuable because they don't know what to do. I mean, they were never set up to promote an industry, and there's no real industry in space that needs their help. If they open it up now, they basically cut themselves off of the foot. That's why, you know, I've suggested things like that ARCJET idea, develop suborbital long-range transport craft, and those would intrinsically pretty much be spaceships. So if you can't develop a market for space, develop a market for something you can use to get to space anyway. Or, you know, wait for the tourist group. But Branson was making some noises over the last couple of months that he's in negotiation with Bigelow to possibly develop a orbit capacity manned craft to deliver people to the Bigelow station. Don't know if that's going to go anywhere, but at least it's a start on an industry.
You read Augustine, and, you know, I'm getting a lot of the email clippings that you send out because you follow the space news really, really well. By the way, you missed that ATK layoff story. You ought to go find that and get the details on it. Because I just saw it in a Space Forward, one quick little summary paragraph, and haven't had a time to go check for it. What would you do? I mean, you know, something, the government is going to have a space policy. And more than likely, they will pick something out of the Augustine options. I don't think they'll pick an option that isn't part of that report, although they may hybrid something. So you're the space czar. What would you do?
I mean, it, like you said, I don't think there's any chance of this doing it. And I was rather disappointed in the Augustine panel because, you know, it's like the Augustine himself, he wasn't aware there were commercials. You know, you thought that was a big surprise. So he's kind of adding in that, well, we could piggyback on SpaceX or something. And like my initial set of questions, you know, why are they spending $100 billion just to develop the ships to return to the moon when, you know, that's rivaling the whole cost of the original space race? If I had the political clout, I would probably try to do something like those Biden shuttles. I said, take a shuttle orbiter, stretch it to put enough internal fuel to get it from the point where the SRBs drop off the current shuttle to orbit. So it'll require stretching the hull about, I don't know, 30, 40 feet and going with kerosene fuel. And then in a Biden's mode, put it belly to belly to the first one. So the first ship, they both take off together, both feeding off of one ship's fuel tank. By the time you get to about the SRB separation point, the Biden ship is running out of fuel. It goes back to the base, and the other ship goes to orbit. It's not high-tech. You can do it with 1970s equipment. You'd probably like to use at least modern composites. But that's something that could be developed even with NASA's pork. I mean, general industrial numbers are it takes four times as much to do a program under NASA as it does to do it commercially. In some special cases like Spaceship One, NASA estimates it would take it 30 to 40 times more money than, you know, a small group like Scale Composite. But even if it was four times as much, the estimates are that it maybe cost NASA $40 billion, and that's the craft with on-orbit refueling and other technology Augustine seemed confused with, or the panel didn't seem comfortable with. So that's the craft that can get you from Earth orbit to lunar orbit and back, and, you know, easily carry a lander. And instead, you're spending vastly more money to develop craft with much, much less capacity, less safety, and in no sense. If I was a czar, I would push the idea, develop a fully reusable craft, don't put NASA in charge, have NASA run like a DARPA thing, just contract for services with the understanding this is a craft that must have, like the DCX, the ability to be turned around and reused within a couple of days, not months, very low overhead, extremely high reliability, you know, pay for hundreds of test flights while you got the quick turnaround, and basically do what they do with aircraft and work out all the bugs. You're talking about aircraft-level money. I mean, shuttle orbiter costs about as much as a Concorde, and they're both government programs, both same-size craft. And then allow that company, after it's with its free time, after it's delivered your guys to the moon or to the space station or whatever,
let them market it at cost. I mean, you've immediately killed SpaceX and all the rest, because if the government is eating all their overhead money, you know, something like this could be delivering cargo to orbit for well under 100, but at least you'd be getting something out of the government tax money. That tens of billions of dollars would fundamentally open up space. And it's like, okay, we've been going round and round with chicken and egg. No one will do things safe when the launch costs are $10,000 a pound. No one will develop cheap launchers if there's no market to service. They have the government just act as an anchor tenant. Fine, we need a spaceship. We need to fly in a dozen times a year. You guys, any time you fly something else, you reimburse us for that fraction of the year's service and that fraction of the whole, you know, support costs or capital costs. We'll eat the cost to support Kennedy, which we're going to do whether we have anything to fly anyway. At least that way, that kind of thing, you wouldn't be spending all this money. You would still be doing a return to the moon program, and you would be doing the little bit of the Bush speech that Griffin immediately forgot, a sustainable way to sustain a presence in space. This would be a vehicle or a fleet of vehicles you could operate. You could do cheap access. The government has just opened the door. Then industry, whether it's Branson or Bigelow or GM or whatever. When I was in down in Houston, the space shuttle program, there was interest in car companies on doing studies in zero-G with flame or weird materials. You know, the aluminum lead alloy bearings not require oil. Or pharmaceutical tests got crushed by NASA for various things. You know, open the damn door to space. NASA does not want to do that because then they become useless. You know, their big centers, all that big infrastructure needs a big inefficient program. I think that's the big reason, my answer to those questions. Why did NASA design such a much more complicated and more expensive way to get back to the moon now? It's taken twice as much money in twice as many years as the system they did in the 60s. They need to eat money in large quantities.
Yeah, so do I. Listen, Kelly, your phone is making such horrible audio buzzes and beeps and sounds, I've got to cut your call. It's really horrible. I don't know what kind of phone line you're on, but this one's not connecting. Talk about resonating with the public. Are you on a VoIP phone?
No, I'm using my cell phone. I can't find the handset.
Another reason people got to use a cell phone when you call the space show. Listen, go back to email, because you're getting hard to understand. It's deteriorating more and more as you keep talking.
Okay, sorry.
So just go think of your namesake and stay listening to the show, okay?
May you have your stitches removed with pliers.
Thank you, Kelly. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Toll-free line is open for quality audio. Come on, no marginal cell phones, no VIP, unless you just want to be on really, really quick and make a point and get off, because it's really hard to do it, and I'm trying to be polite and not pull the gong chain on your call. I do have a message I'm going to read. This is from Doug, who called in the first segment of the show regarding Kelly. I didn't advocate NASA getting all the money in my scenario. I mentioned the private sector several times. New space and its natural economic evolution, not government space, are the compelling reasons for space development. Well, one of these days I'm going to do a show about the business quality of new space, because this really chaps me. And, you know, we'll have to carefully define new space. I understand that. But, you know, until new space is really conducting some business at some kind of real commercial levels, boy, telling me that new space is the way to go is telling me, like, the way to go lose weight is to eat key lime pie every day by Sarah Lee. So, but I'm going to do a show about that. So you don't need to comment now, because we're nearing the stated end of the regular show time. But it's worth a show. In fact, if I can pull off one of the panel programs that you will read about in the funding projects that will be posted on the One Giant Leap website, that would be a really good panel discussion. The quality and potential and commercial value of new space, or define the topic a little bit differently. It needs some thought. Okay, I'm going to move on to this from June in Las Vegas, Nevada. And June says, while you've been doing all of this talking and you've had these callers on, I went to the Fox page and the Neil Cavuto cut that you talked about is up, at least the first part of it, including the Buzz Aldrin interview. The Neil Cavuto comments are really depressing. I can't believe he thinks that way, let alone said it. It's too bad that the financial advisor that you talked about coming on the show after Buzz was through is not up on the website. I couldn't find it either on Fox's main site or on Neil's business site. Also, you mentioned you have the audio cuts. Would you be willing to send them to people who requested them? And the answer is no, I'm not going to send them. I don't have the copyright approval on it. Also, they're big audio files, and I don't want to spend my time sending email audio files to people. And I can't put them on an FTP site or anything like that because I don't have the copyright, and I just don't want to deal with it. Probably nothing would happen, and there wouldn't be any difficulty. I mean, if I really didn't care about it, I'd put the cuts up on YouTube. I don't know if they would take them off because, again, I don't have copyright, and I know YouTube is paying more and more careful attention to copyrights. You might find them on YouTube already if you go and YouTube search for Neil Cavuto or Shepard Smith on space on Friday, October 9th, and see what you come up with. I mean, those cuts may be there. Those programs may be there. I didn't try to do that. But no, I'm not going to send them out, and I'm sorry. I know that'll disappoint some of you. About the comments, I'm not going to read her comments about Buzz, but I will say this. It was a very challenging interview with Buzz for a variety of reasons. Being in the biz, so to speak, my take on it was that that Buzz was in a remote studio, and I have a feeling there was something going on with the earbuds or the audio connection, because it was like Neil and Buzz were not totally synced up, and that happens if there's something going on with your remote audio, and maybe the engineers were working on a problem, and you'd be really discombobulated and confused. It's like people calling this show, and they're listening to the stream on the internet, and the sound is turned up. This is why you hear talk show hosts all the time say, turn off your radio. You'll get really disconnected, discombobulated very quickly, because there are phase gaps in what's happening, and you're trying to hear two different sequences of the same thing, and it's really confusing. And so I think there was an audio issue there. I know Buzz real well, and he's been on the show, and he's very articulate and has a great case to make. And in fact, the Moon Society just adopted a Buzz Aldrin policy about going to the moon. Let me see if I still have it, and I'll tell you what that is. I'm not sure. I may have erased it. I wasn't thinking about. No, I guess I deleted it already. But you probably can go to the moonsociety.com, I think is their website, and you can find the Buzz Aldrin statement. You'll probably find it coming up on the net pretty soon. I would urge everybody to check it out. It's kind of an international consortium to go to the moon. This is a note from Charles in Mojave. Kelly says that could be developed at the expense of other competing ones. It's a question mark. If I were the space czar, or there are other would-be czars, it's a zero-sum game. Nobody will get anywhere. So everybody has a different point, and we're going nowhere in space. I know how to find Buzz's statement. Hold on a minute, because I send it to somebody, and I can read what I sent to people. So just give me a minute here as I'm looking through email, and I can probably come up with it in just a second. Moon Society Vice President Charles Radley and President Peter Koch received a personal request from Buzz Aldrin to endorse his proposal for a public-private international plan to open the moon for exploration and development. The proposal was subsequently published on the Huffington Post. And then they give you the long URL for the Huffington Post. So I assume you can find it if you go to HuffingtonPost.com. Huffington, by the way, is HuffingtonPost, all one word, .com. And you'll probably see a link to Buzz Aldrin, A Different Kind of Moon. Below are the key excerpts. And then this is Buzz saying, so it's in first person. I propose instead America call the world to the moon in a new global effort to use the moon to establish a global space consortium with a lunar surface facility at its epicenter. Competition in an Apollo-style race back to the moon would be a fruitless exercise in national hubris whose rewards, if we won again, would prove fleeting. I am proposing a different way back to the moon, international collaboration, the goal of creating a new public-private partnership to develop the moon. I call it the Lunar Infrastructure Development Corporation. LID as in David, C. The purpose of the LIDC would be to enable the nations of the Earth to join together and return to the moon as an international cooperative venture. The LIDC will pool the financial, technical, and human resources of its member nations to build the lunar communications, navigation, and transportation systems needed for human exploration of the moon. It would be a public-private global partnership to make the moon accessible to all humanity. The LIDC will build the communication and navigation satellites needed by future lunar travelers, develop fuel depots using lunar locks, perhaps derived from the recently discovered lunar water, and construct habitats that will shelter space travelers while on the surface. It will enable a sustainable human presence on the moon that will be accessible to all the nations of the Earth. Unlike the International Space Station, ISS, which is governed by complex treaties, the LIDC will have the same flexibility as a non-government office NGO in working with different nations, and private entities to finance, build, and operate the facilities and equipment needed for lunar exploration. To do so, honoring the astronauts of the Apollo-era missions doesn't require rerunning a long-ago Cold War race in which America plays the role of a space-going colonial power. We immediately notified all Moon Society. Now, this is the Moon Society replying. We immediately notified all Moon Society officers and directors who collectively make up the management committee, who would decide whether or not to give the Moon Society's official endorsement to this policy. The email vote was unanimous. As Ben Nault, director from Tucson, put it, probably the main reason the ISS is still alive and supported by Congress is that it is part of a number of international agreements. Backing out of these agreements would have financial, political, and diplomatic repercussions on the U.S. Therefore, having an international component helps large complex programs survive the transitions to different administrations and different congressional moods. The international angle gives long-term sustainability to the Lunar Infrastructure Development Corporation. In asking the committee members' support, we pointed out significant similarities with our own proposal, also strongly endorsed by the committee members, for an international lunar research park. Both proposals are for public-private international collaboration, and on and on and on. So if you want more information about this, it would take me another 15 minutes to read it. You can go to the Moon Society, and here I'll give you their website. Maybe I'll give you their website. I'm not sure. Where is their website? Well, I think it's moonsocietyoneword.org. And I'm sure you'll find Buzz's comments there and the Moon Society's comments as well. So in the remaining minutes we can talk about going to the moon, and does the BUZZ program make sense? What do you all think about that? I mean, should we even be going to the moon? I know there's a difference of opinions there. So we're coming up on the end of the show, but I will keep it running for a little while longer if you all still want to call in or send in an email. The toll-free number, let me give it out again, 1-866-687-7223. No call screeners. The line is open right now. If you want to continue to call in and talk, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. And again, anything is pretty much fair game, as you've heard tonight. Here's another question. This is from Todd, and Todd is in Reno. And he says, I too went to the Fox website. I heard the Cavuto comments. I couldn't believe my ears. I'd love to hear the other comments. I'll see if I can find them on YouTube or Google later on. Maybe somebody doesn't care about copyrights like you do and put it up for others to hear, and it hasn't been taken down yet. There is a massive re-education needed if people as bright as Cavuto are saying the things that he's saying about space development and the need and the value of being in space. It's a sad day that the space cadets are finding out that their arguments resonate only among themselves. So that's Todd's comment from Reno. So I guess anyone can go to the Fox webpage, and you'll see an icon for Cavuto and BUZZ talking about LCROSS and going to the moon, and that's the one you want to click. And it's I believe it's foxnews.com. But the other one with the financial guy is unfortunately not there. Hopefully someone can find it elsewhere. And if it's elsewhere, I certainly don't have any problem giving out the URL to anybody. Nobody wanted to respond to the questions I asked earlier or suggest guests. Why does it cost NASA twice as much now to return to the moon than it did the first time? Why does it cost NASA more now to make Ares 1, which shuttle-derived SRB, than it cost them to develop the shuttle in the first place? Why does it cost NASA more now to make the Orion capsule and service module than it cost them to make the orbiter? Again, if you would like to address any of those issues, give us a call or an email or chat us in. And if you know of people that could be good guests on those topics, I'm all ears. I'd welcome your recommendation. So I have this question. Boy, I guess the Cavuto thing, hit the temple for tonight. This is Bob, and Bob is in Atlanta. And he said, I also listened to Cavuto. Actually, I listened to the show when it was being played live. I could not believe what Cavuto was saying. And you're right, the financial guy for that 5 minutes after the BUZZ interview was horrible. I could not believe educated people were talking that way. Boy, did we fail in getting our message across. And here is a network that is probably the most favorable toward space of all the networks. At least they still cover shuttle launches. All the other networks don't even do that unless something special or unusual or something bad has happened. It's disgusting to find that our message doesn't resonate with so many intelligent people. Well, Bob heard it live, so he knows what I'm commenting on. I'm not seeing the phone ringing, and we are just about over the time slot. Let me tell you what we've got for Sunday. Ralph Nansen that's a week from Sunday. Let me tell you who's on Sunday, because we've got a really interesting program, and I'm getting my Sundays confused. This has to do with organizing these shows and doing them when I was under the influence of being put to sleep for a while. So I get to cop a plea and an excuse. Here we go. So, Ralph Nansen is with us, and Ralph has a new book called Energy Crisis, The Solution for Space. He's a big advocate for space solar power, and his new book is published by Apogee. It's on the One Giant Leap Amazon Partners webpage at onegiantleapfoundation.org/books/. And Apogee has given me one book to give away. So I will be giving that book away to the first person who calls the show with a question or comment for Mr. Nansen. He is the founder and president of Solar Space Industries. Excuse me, and he was formerly Boeing's Solar Power Satellite Program Manager, and he is recognized as one of the key leaders in dealing with space solar power and the energy crisis. The Friday show, let me tell you what that is, because I'm really looking forward to the Friday show. Dr. Jim Logan, the NASA flight surgeon, is back with us. You've heard Jim many times on the show before. He has also spoken freely at various advocate conferences, ISDC, Space Frontier Foundation, plus reviewed conferences. He's very well known. And we're going to be talking about human factors for real, not wish list human factors, not phony human factors, but real human factors. And I'm going to ask Jim to make the compelling case for human spaceflight, because he's okaying and approving the astronauts to go up there. You know, he's the flight surgeon guy that can pull your ticket, so to speak. So let's hear what he has to say, if he will address that question. So Jim Logan is with us on Friday. Ralph Nansen is with us on Sunday. So it looks like the open lines crowd have petered out for the night. Boy, Charles and Doug, you guys, I'm going to put you all in touch with each other, and you can hash it out with each other. Let's see, Kelly, I disagree in zero sum. One, you at least save $50 billion on the Return to the Moon program. If you considering, it's hard to read. And more critically, it starts at a low cost below $100 a pound public launch service. We don't have $100 a pound launches. By fielding 50 to 100 pound launch services, you throw the door open to foster large-scale space development. I think we should at least try to see if that's possible in the space industry. Okay, $50 to $100. Kelly knows that I disagree with him on that. And this is from Doug again. Absolutely, we need to go to the moon. Well, really, tell that to the general public, Doug. Treating our current economic situation as an excuse to abandon space advancement is not just ludicrous, but could conceivably be catastrophic. I happen to agree with you 100%. It's just that we don't make the case very well. Space has given us many advancements to the human condition that I cannot fathom the dark ages that would follow us by abandoning it. I agree with you 100%. It's the case that you're making that I had trouble with when you were talking on air. The questions you ask, why does NASA cost more? Two shuttle disasters plus paranoia plus escalating costs. Well, all of that is part of the equation. But look what we pay for energy today versus what we paid in the 70s and 80s. Look what labor makes. Look what benefits make. Look what insurance costs. Transportation segment, manufacturing, raw materials. You know, everything is higher. Plus, we upgrade, whether it's needed or not, to have the latest bells and whistles. You know that. Go buy a new car. Look at all the new bells and whistles. My 2000 model Camry or whatever I have, works just fine. Why do I need more bells and whistles? Especially when you have to pay for them, right? There's a lot of reasons, but Doug, right on the money. No problem. So, I'm going to, email Doug, Charles, and Kelly all in one batch. So you all will have each other's email address and you can go after your, respective jugulars. Okay. Let's see. What else can I tell you about the space show? I guess that's it. Please, when I make the announcement that the funding projects are up on the One Giant Leap site are available, go check them out. Maybe you can't support us for the full cost of some of these projects, but maybe you want to get involved with some of the cost. And we can't do these projects and we can't keep the space show going without your support. And we definitely need your emotional support. Trust me, there's some pretty dark hours from time to time doing this show, and we absolutely need your financial support, which is why we're a nonprofit, and you still do get a tax deduction, you know, when you donate to us. And if you pay U.S. taxes, and hopefully you do pay U.S. taxes if you have earned U.S. income. I don't want anyone to have to go to war with the IRS. I have too many friends that have done that, and one of them was on the show on Sunday serving out the rest of his term, rightly or wrongly. It's not something that anyone wants to go fight and challenge. Trust me on that. So, listeners, that will be it for this Open Lines program. We will be back Friday with Dr. Jim Logan. We will be back Sunday with Ralph Nansen, and then we start another week of Space Show programs. Your emails are always welcome, drspace@thespaceshow.com. Your suggestions, your feedback, your guest ideas, always welcome. And thank you for listening, thank you for calling, and thank you for participating with your emails and chat. Good night.